Thank you for tuning in to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, all things Bucks, all kinds of different things NFL. It's the custodian of Canton himself, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, on his twice-weekly podcasts every Tuesday and Thursday. And of course, the podcasts do not exist. We are not here if it's not for Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ed Morse is challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest prices of the summer. Over at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, General Manager Brian Danahy is knocking out the competition during the Ed Morse Summer Sales Challenge. Right now, take advantage of the summer's best offers like the iconic 2017 CTS sedan lease for just $409. Get the best prices of the summer at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or click edmorsecadillactampa.com. See dealer for all the details, every last one of them. And don't forget Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com is the place to start your car shopping search. The Summer Sales Challenge is still going strong there. General Manager Mark Wamsley also is knocking out the other dealers with low prices on new Cadillacs. Get a 2017 ATS, $349 a month, or a 2017 XT5, $389 a month. The Summer Sales Challenge is on. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. See dealer for all the details. And we'll talk more about Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. But we appreciate them and we appreciate you. And without further ado, let's head over to the podcast and Mr. Ira Kaufman. Welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, Tuesday, July 25th. It's almost here, Mr. Kaufman, and I'm not talking about the lunch, okay? Get your mind off lunch. It's almost here, training camp. What fans have been waiting for since the Bucks walked off the field in January. Of course, your past episodes of your podcast, six of them, in fact, have featured Dirk Cutter, who joined us for the offseason. You can catch up on those at iTunes or Podbean or JoeBucksFan.com. We appreciate all the support. Leave a damn comment, too. You listen to the podcast for 40 minutes. You can type out a 35 seconds.
Pro or con, we don't care.
Take 30 seconds out of your life, type a comment. Ira likes to hear it. He's the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Whatever you want to say,
man,
spit it out.
Man of the people, Steve, as you have called me.
Flesh presser, as he likes to say. And Ira, here we are. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper joins us, of course.
Hey, we're 2 days from reporting day, Steven.
I cannot believe that we made it. We made it this far, Ira, and we just have a little bit more to go. So here's what I wanted to ask you today, Ira. You know, you are a sage of Tampa Bay sports. And what does that really mean? And we say that all the time.
It means I've been around for a long time.
Means you've been around for a long time and a little bit more. And you also came from another market, covering the Giants as a beat reporter. You've been around. You went to the Daytona 500 once to cover that. We heard that story a few weeks ago where you didn't know what the hell you were doing.
I picked the Raiders to beat the Bucks. We've heard that story in the Super Bowl. That's right.
The most shameful story in the history of Tampa Bay journalism. And wow. I hope you can decide one of these days to let us push for a correction to appear. Because that record needs to be fixed.
15 years in arrears over here, Mr. Isbitz.
That's got to be fixed. All right, forget about that soapbox.
I am going to stand behind what I said in a column a week or two ago, gentlemen. And you can say you disagree with me 180%. Lee, this will be a training camp like no other in franchise history. And I detailed some of the reasons. Hard knocks.
Yes.
On the site. High expectations. Ain't had them around here.
Not recently, certainly not.
Not recently. We have a kicking battle. That sounds crazy, but it's generating a lot of interest.
It's true.
Even among the players.
Yes.
As has been documented. We've got a guy making a transition on the offensive line, which is not easy. We've got DeSean Jackson trying to fit in. We got a host of interesting issues going on. And most of all, we've got a fan base that can't wait to break a 9-year playoff drought. And they are convinced to a man, woman, and child that this is the year that drought ends, Lee.
Well, you omitted one significant factor.
Give me another one.
A huge one.
Huge one.
Joe Bucks fan on site?
Well, no.
Stick carriers on site?
Yes.
There you go.
No, on top of that, Ira, you omitted Doug Martin. That's the mystery
here.
Another,
well, not according to you, because you think it's a closed deal. The book's closed on Doug Martin. Lee likes to open it a crack.
Listen, nobody ever said that. Stop making up stuff. Stop that.
Well, what you're saying is that I was right. This is a training camp like no other. That's what you're
all
saying.
All we've ever said is that roughly 10% shot Martin's here. That's what I've said. And we've been through those reasons. And we're talking here by week four when he's eligible to actually play. Now, Ira, you cut me off. Of course you did. That's what you do. But again, you're a sage because you've seen countless training camps. You've observed countless things. You've been to Falcons training camp. You've been to Panthers training camp when you worked for the Tampa Tribune as their lead NFL scribe. And you've been other places as well, New York Giants, wherever.
They sent me to the Cheese League. I saw the Chiefs, and I believe it was the Rams.
Saints were up there too, right?
I don't know if the Saints were. I didn't see
the Cheese
Saints.
League was like six teams at one point.
And the Packers I saw, and the Packers.
Yeah, so you've been around. You've been
Bears
around.
Were up there.
The point is, what we want to ask you is training camp practice starts Friday. It's an underwear football session because they don't go to pads till the third day, I believe. What are you looking for? What do you like to see in these early practices, first week of camp? What do you like to look at?
I'm going to bore in here a little bit, drill down a little bit. It's not the most exciting part of the game, but I think it's critical to the success of the 2017 Buccaneers. I'm looking at Ali Marpet, and I'm looking hard. Now, I've beaten this drum many times, and you know, frankly, the Bucs are probably tired of hearing me say it. He has zero experience. Zero. They say, no, you know, during some practices last year, we let him fill in for Hawley a little bit. That don't count. Yeah. That don't count. So this goes to when the pads come on, which we're not far away from.
Nope.
And when those pads come on, and Dirk Koetter is already on record, gentlemen, not in so many words, but this was the meaning. They got beat up in the middle of the offensive line. Mm-hmm. They got physically whipped. And we saw it with the running backs for the most part. When you average 3.6 yards a carry as a team, that's pretty dreadful, especially compared to what you did in 2015. They were whipped up front in the middle. That's one of the big reasons Marpet's getting this job, getting this opportunity. Now, I know they always said, well, Marpet's going to be a center projected. But if Hawley held his own last year, Marpet'd still be a right guard.
Well, would he? Because of Sweezy?
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, if Sweezy is perfectly healthy and all the money they had invested in him, they were going to make room for him somewhere.
I want to see Marpet mauling people in the center of that offensive line. And the quarterback, there's nothing more elemental in football than the center quarterback exchange. Mm-hmm. Everybody takes it for granted until it screws up. I want to see how many times the ball's on the ground. And every time that ball's on the ground, Koetter's going to go crazy. And I don't blame him.
Yeah.
That ball's on the ground. You're losing possessions. So I'm watching Marpet's transition very, very closely.
Well, it's one thing
it's
to
not
do
sexy, but it's vital.
It's one thing to do that in practice because that's what's practice for. Work out your mistakes. That starts happening in preseason games.
Now you got Baker and McCoy over you in practice.
Yeah.
Now in week one, you got Ndamukong Suh standing right off your shoulder. Mm-hmm. That's intimidating. It's intimidating for a veteran center, let alone Marpet.
All right, let me smack you around, Ira, to refocus you here. Okay, so you know what? You're at practice.
Am I unfocused over here at the camp?
Yeah, I think you're unfocused. I want you more focused. Okay, so you're at practice. You're watching the center exchange. You know, not sexy, as you call it, but it looks good through the first few practices. Okay, it looks pretty good. What else are you looking for? There's got to be something else you're looking at.
Well, I want to see Winston's timing with his new targets. He doesn't have a lot to prove with Mike Evans. Mike Evans was outstanding last year, Pro Bowl season. But I want to see him with O.J. Howard. Certainly want to see him on the deep ball of DeSean Jackson. I want to see him with Godwin when guys are trying to play defense, and it's not an OTA session. I'm not too worried about Humphreys because they got a nice rapport there. He's got new targets, gentlemen, and you don't snap your fingers and develop a rhythm and timing. Now, I know he's been working with Tim Grover, but that's not helping him. That's not helping him with DeSean Jackson.
No, not at all.
It's not helping him. And DeSean Jackson is a whole other animal in terms of timing, downfield speed. Jameis Winston's never thrown to anybody like DeSean Jackson.
You think he can overthrow him?
He says you can't. He says it's difficult. And I believe it is difficult. But I think all three of us, even Isbitz, would be in agreement.
Oh, that's saying a lot.
Jameis has not distinguished himself through 2 years in throwing the deep ball. Now, question is, does he have guys that can get open? Can they run down a pass like DeSean Jackson? You remember, you thought it was very interesting, Steve. You paid me a rare compliment when I tracked down Andy Reid in Arizona at the owners' meetings and asked him about DeSean Jackson.
Like a mosquito to a raw flesh.
And you know, because he had him in Philadelphia. He knows DeSean Jackson. And he said the difference between DeSean Jackson and other guys that are deep threats, considered deep threats, is he doesn't slow up to look over his shoulder. He's still going at that top speed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of guys slow up, and all of a sudden it's a misconnection.
Yeah.
So
he has a chance for a cornerback to catch up when you stop.
Yeah, and that's right. And you give a guy that's beaten a chance to catch up. So I'm watching very close. Is that sexy enough for you, Mr. Isbitz? Jameis Winston's timing with his new targets?
That was very sexy, Ira. Very very sexy. Look, I just wanted you to give more of your sage habits.
This is not Charlize Theron over here, but you know, it's still a little bit sexy. I understand.
This Jameis with long ball. I got to get this off my chest. I may have written this before on JoeBucksFan.com, but he was not inaccurate in college at all. I mean, my own eyes, in person. And I happened to be in Pittsburgh Labor Day weekend 3 years ago. Cardinals were playing the Pirates. I have friends, very good friends in Pittsburgh.
After going to the Premonti Brothers.
That goes without saying. Okay, let's put it this way. When you go to Premonti Brothers, yeah, don't order a salad.
Don't order a salad. And a soup. And a soup.
Well, soup, I can see. But a salad at Premonti Brothers? I mean, come on.
Come on.
Anyway. I was in Labor Day weekend 3 years ago. I specifically watched the Cardinals visit my friends. I have good friends up there.
This wasn't the first game Winston ever played for FSU.
Oh, by the way, next door to PNC Park, at the Steelers Stadium, Florida State and Pitt, Monday night game. Like, what the hell? Let's go.
Yes, it was his first game.
It was his first game.
Yeah. And my friend of mine, he played college football. We went there, and I had heard about Jameis Winston.
You'd heard about him.
But that's it. And, you know, halfway through the second quarter, we're looking at each other like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? You know, we haven't had that many beers. And it's like, he was just threading needles 30, 40 yards down the field. If I remember correctly, he only had two incompletions the whole game, one of which a guy dropped. And he never had problems with downfield accuracy at all in college. And all of a sudden, the NFL, I think it might be two things. One, you brought it up, receivers. That's number one.
Separation. Yeah, yeah,
just receivers in general, because, you know, my gosh, Steve and I wrote time after time after time outside of Mike Evans. He had no receivers. That's one. And the other one is, I wonder if they monkeyed with Jameis's mechanics. You know, he had that baseball throw. He had big strides. Sometimes, you know, hey, it's working. Don't fix something that's not broken. I just wonder if monkeying with his mechanics may have goofed up his long ball.
Maybe the feeling was, for the long haul, we need to work on his mechanics.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's...
And make a few tweaks.
And I don't know if that's accurate or not. What I mean by that is, I don't know if that's what made him somewhat inaccurate on long field balls, but he didn't have this problem in college, so...
On paper, Steve, and I've said this, on paper, I don't know that there's a better receiving core on paper than what the Bucs are going to present this fall if those guys are healthy.
Steelers.
And don't forget about Cameron Brate. Well, Antonio Brown's the number one guy in the league, in my opinion. He's number one. I think he's better than Julio Jones.
Bryant? I mean, they've got guys, their
well,
receivers.
Well, don't sell the Buck guys short. DeSean Jackson's a proven commodity.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not selling them short.
It's a proven commodity.
After DeSean Jackson, Godwin's a mystery.
Cameron
Brate
scored 8 touchdowns.
Well, I'm just talking receivers. I'm not talking about tight ends. I'm talking receivers.
Yeah, let's say this about DeSean Jackson. I told you, this century, he's second overall this century, DeSean Jackson, in average yards per catch. So wherever he's been, all the different quarterbacks he's had, he goes deep and makes explosive plays better than anyone.
He's not a volume receiver, Steve. Not a volume receiver.
No, and that's fine. But he leads the league in yards per catch. Last year, I believe he did it again. And career, he's number two this century.
And don't think that wasn't the primary reason that got Cutter excited.
And that should not drop off. That should not drop off with Mike Evans on the other side. Reality is, it's probably Jameis if it does drop off. You know, assuming Jackson isn't hurt.
You assume Cutter's going to call the plays to get Jackson the ball in space.
Or it's their timing, which, you know, when he was first signed, I asked Cutter about that chemistry, that timing, that, you know, receiver, quarterback stuff that's so critical. Cutter was like, well, you know what? Sometimes it takes a long time. Could take a year kind of thing. And it could.
Buck fans don't have a year.
No, they don't. But it could take that long to really have a gel. And would we be surprised if the first few weeks of the season that we don't see Jameis, you know, underthrow Jackson terribly in Miami, and then he's all jacked up at the beginning of the game, and his, you know, his mindset, because the timing isn't there, and he
throws an early pick against the Bears, you know, like Jameis is known to do, you mess up early because of that timing issue and receivers, sure. But the deep ball, I think the jury's still out on Jameis. I don't think he's had enough weapons to prove that he can't do it. But reality is, he's still in the greatness of NFL quarterbacks in general, Josh McCown notwithstanding. Jameis isn't very good at the deep ball in the scope of NFL quarterbacks.
Hey, Lee, one bigger point about the Buck offense. Now, look, I just said they're target rich, and I believe they are. But having said that, gentlemen, Cutter's pedigree, to me, his portfolio, suggests that he's not in love with throwing the ball 70% of the time. I don't think he is. He wasn't in Jacksonville. He wasn't in Atlanta, where they did have some good backs for a lot of those years. It was a very balanced offense. Look what he did in 2015. They set a franchise record, and Doug Martin was going crazy, and Sims was very effective. They had a very balanced offense. Well, so what I'm saying is, and it goes back to one of Cutter's lines in our interviews, could the Bucs throw for 5,000 yards this fall? Yeah, they could. I don't think they will. Mm-hmm. This is not going to be Drew Brees balls to the wall. It's not. If it is, I think that means the Bucs are in trouble.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. An unbalanced offense is generally on a losing team. Well, not a success. Eric Coryell, to a lesser degree, was a perfect example. Coryell got teams to the playoffs, and when they got to the playoffs, they folded because they're, what, 80% pass.
When the Saints won the Super Bowl, way back when,
they
had a good running game, Steve. They had backs.
Sure.
They were balanced. Mm-hmm. And Brees wasn't throwing 45 balls a game, and that helps your defense. It
sure does.
It has ripple effects.
It certainly does. You know, you're talking about DeSean Jackson earlier and chemistry with Jameis, and Steve kind of touched upon it. Does DeSean Jackson still have it? The stats say yes. But I thought it was very telling. We had this on JoeBucksFan.com earlier this month. Mike Garofolo at the NFL Network. He was on Good Morning America with
your favorite show.
Good Morning Football.
Good Morning Football, not Good Morning America. I always, when I'm typing it up, I actually type up Good Morning America. Backspace. Good Morning Football.
What, was Kay Adams on the show?
Yeah, and she was wearing some kind of shaggy bathrobe. I didn't get it.
I didn't ask you what she was wearing. I asked if she was on the show.
It was a bad ensemble. I'll tell you that. Anyway, Garofolo was saying, you know, he talked to Light, and he said, and he was down, Garofalo was down during minicamp at One Buck Palace. He said he was talking to Light. What convinced you that DeSean Jackson was the right guy? What convinced you that he still has it? And Jason Light said, looking at game tape of last year, the way the cornerbacks were playing off him, he said, they were giving him so much cushion. He goes, if he didn't have it, he wouldn't be getting that kind of cushion. I thought that was very insightful. It wasn't so much what DeSean Jackson was doing. It was what opposing cornerbacks, how they were covering him. I thought that was a really cool
anecdote. When the season ended, if not even before, they targeted DeSean Jackson, and they were not going to get outbid for DeSean Jackson.
Absolutely. A couple of important things. One, Ira, you teased Dirk Cutter talking about throwing for 5,000 yards. I'm sure a lot of Buccaneers fans just heard that and were like, what? What the hell? Coming up Thursday in our podcast will be part 7 of Dirk Cutter joining us here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. So Dirk Cutter joined us. We sat down with him in June, and that was one of the nuggets that we're sharing on Thursday. So yeah, Cutter actually talks about, and we'll save it for then, but he actually talks about the Buccaneers throwing for 5,000 yards. And he said, no problem. One team actually did that last year. That was the Saints, which, of course, was the number one offense in the league.
And what'd they do?
7-9 again.
Bingo.
Cutter would love that kind of offense, though. You know, you don't. If you could do that, if you feel you can do that, that's an interesting thing.
The Saints do that by necessity.
They have to, yeah.
They have to.
They're behind.
They're not. They still won 7 games.
I mean, seven games.
You're going to be happy with a 7-9
record? No, I'm saying that's the – they're running their offense. They're not – they're just – that's their offense. I mean, that's intentional, and their offense isn't what's –
I don't know if that was intentional because their defense is horrid. It was a necessity more than intentional.
I'm with DeKemper on this. Does that surprise you?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not with anybody. I think you have you have to look at their games individually to make that statement. I don't think any of us could sit here and say, well – were the Saints forced into throwing and their decision-making in those games and how they managed the games, I don't know.
What game was that last year? Was it the Giants? That, I mean, it was like a ridiculous amount of offense.
Yeah.
Then the Breeze throw was like 600 yards or something like that.
Track meet. Yeah.
But the Saints also, look, when they were good, they were also running the score. Saints were a team that would beat you 45-11, no problem.
But with a balanced offense.
They beat the Buccaneers, I believe, 2012. Crush them. I mean, Luciano's Bucks went up there. They got rolled. I mean, they rang up the score. It was 41-0. I mean, the Bucks were done before halftime. And
they were still in Bourbon Street.
The Saints play one way. I think everybody knows that.
Lee, may I put his bits in his place?
No.
May I?
There we go.
They've been 7-9 three straight seasons. End of story. Three straight seasons. End of story.
Okay, Ira. Okay. Now, so that's exciting coming up. Wanted to make sure everybody understood that little
We haven't even touched on the kicking battle, Steve. We haven't touched on it.
Second, first, we're going to touch on Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa, Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Of course, the beginning of the podcast, everybody heard their great offers. But the July offers, you know, Ira, the great offers at Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, they do end at the end of the month. Sometimes they're held over a few days, but they do end. So there are always new ones, but you really need to move. And the first move is go to edmoorescadillactampa.com, edmoorescadillacbrandon.com. Start your search right there every single time. You'll be impressed, just like you will be with everything that Ed Morse does. Now, Ira, you actually brought a topic to the table today, which you never do. You come unprepared, you bring food, you bring complaints, but you don't bring topics. And it's one of the things, and I'm teasing you a little bit, of course, but there's a lot of truth in that.
He brings a toad.
He brings his wisdom. One of the things you wanted to talk about, you said, guys, I want to name who's going to step up this year, who's going to take a step back, what I'm looking for on this roster, a guy to step up, a guy to step back, and something in between maybe. You want us to chime in on that. So, Ira, you go ahead and
I'm going to start it off.
Feed off your sage wisdom.
My nominee for step up, Vernon Hargraves, and I'll tell you why. Because, like a lot of rookies with talent, they proceed into their first season with caution. Caution. They don't want to get beat. They don't want to look bad. They're unsure whether they belong at the pro level.
Unsure
they don't
know is the key word. Keyword
they
unsure.
They don't know for sure.
Keyword.
And Hargraves hadn't proven himself to Mike Smith, to Dirk Cutter, to his teammates. As a result, gentlemen, I think the fairest word is tentative. A bit tentative.
Yeah.
He gave more of a cushion, generally speaking, than I think he needed to. A guy with that kind of catch-up speed. And now, guys, most importantly, the coaching staff is on record, public record, saying they want him to be more bold, trust his skills, more aggressive. And I think that's going to have a big effect on Hargraves, who I think one of the reasons he went in the top half of the first round of his draft class, his ball skills. And we really didn't see it.
A little bit we saw. Carolina game springs to mind.
Springs to mind. I want to see tipped balls. I want to see him go after balls in the air. More challenging. And I dare say with Grimes, he's going to be tested when you got Grimes on the other side until Grimes proves he can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And we certainly didn't see any evidence of that. Right, Miko? And Hargraves going to be picked on again, and he knows it. And I think this year he's going to be a lot more forceful, more confident corner in year two, and I think we're going to see his ball skills come to the forefront.
Well, with Hargraves, there's a couple elements I got to touch upon that you brought up. I think it's just experience, plain and simple, just experience. You know, he's not a rookie anymore. But when you said he was playing off receivers a lot, where's the coaching staff? Say, hey, Vernon, get up there. That you know, I can't hit him. I can't ding him for that when the coaches just said, Vernon, get closer. That's what you have coaches for. So that's telling me the coaches were telling him to give him a cushion.
Maybe because he was a rookie.
That could be. But, you know, if he was making a mistake by giving people too much of a cushion, where's the coaching staff? Say, hey, get, you know, that's the foundation of coaching is adjustments. Come on, Vernon, get up there. And to back up Vernon a little bit, the phrase that Steve coined that I think is beautiful, the well-trained orangutans at Pro Football Focus, they don't like Hargraves because he was targeted so much. Hello, you had Grimes on the other side and a rookie on the other. Duh, what's a quarterback going to do in the NFL? They're going to go after a Pro Bowl cornerback? Hell no, they're going to go after a rookie. Does that make the rookie?
That's reflection on Hargraves.
Yeah, that's beyond idiotic. And while I'm on this rant about Pro Football Focus, you know, they came out with their grades about the Bucs offensive line. I didn't go there because it was so freaking predictable. But what I thought was hilarious, it was recently, They had the worst offensive lineman on the Bucs. Take a guess. The worst offensive lineman. I was surprised.
Don't tell me they said Marpet.
No.
Oh.
They aren't that illiterate. They're close, but not that illiterate.
Well, it could be Smith.
No, I was surprised because as much as they hate him, I thought sure it was you.
Dotson, I'm running out of guys over here.
No,
we got Pamphile and then
yes. And what did Dirk Cutter say mid-season without any provocation?
Graded out the best.
Yes, graded out the best. And these clowns had him as the worst offensive.
I'll trust the Buck right now, Lee.
Thank you.
Give us your step back guy.
All right, my potential step back guy is DeSean Jackson.
Well, it was all potential. Yes.
DeSean Jackson, and I'll tell you why. DeSean Jackson did not make his name and his fame with his guile, with his height, with his hands. He made it with his feet and his speed. And at his age, with as much football as he's played behind him, eventually he's going to lose a step. Is that going to happen this fall? Probably not. Hopefully not. But it might. Mm-hmm. And if he loses a step, he kind of loses everything. And that's why I'm saying potentially DeSean Jackson could be showing his age in the fall of 2017.
And you've gone on record, by the way, saying he will not finish his contract out with the Bucs.
I'm going to stick with that.
By the way, what is the date again today, Steve? It's so
25th.
Today's 25th. Mark it down. July 25th, 2017. The first time the word guile was used, it probably ever in any type of NFL podcast.
Well, I'm certainly not going to use it for anything that Isbit says, you know.
Thank you, Ira.
All right, weigh in on DeSean Jackson.
You could be right, but you know what? If I had to pick a potential, and this is going to freak people out, if I had to pick a potential...
drop back?
Well, no, what was the first one we used?
First one's a guy who's going to step forward this year.
And we don't know if the guy's going to be on the team or not. And I'm on record as saying I'd move on from him. But Doug Martin, he's a boom or bust guy. And so, I mean, if I had to lay money, if I was in Vegas gambling, you know, if I'm Dirk Cutter, Doug Martin doesn't come back. I'm sorry. If I'm Jason Light, Doug Martin doesn't come back. You can't bank on him. You can't trust him. But if I was gambling, if I was going to put $20 down, I'd put Doug Martin because he's boom or bust.
But Lee, you're picking a guy who's already proven he can get the job done on the pro level. I'm over there trying to find a guy who really hasn't done it yet. And so,
okay,
what I'm saying is, who hasn't done it?
Okay,
I'm taking more of a gamble than the
okay.
Kemper over
well,
here.
Well, to be honest, Doug Martin has proven more often than not he can't get the job
okay.
done. So
that's true,
and that's just a fact. It's just that simple.
You're like Noah Spence. You know, you're looking at.
Hey, don't put words in his mouth, Calvin.
You're right,
He picked his guy.
Yeah, pick your guy. All right, so
here we go. Beckwith, someone high up with the Bucs. And I didn't make this bet. He said, hey, I'll bet you this.
How many times has the Kemper preceded his remarks by saying, someone high up?
Well, I'm not going to out a guy. This was off the record.
Don't you ever talk to any underlings? It's always some guy that's...
Why would I want to talk to a janitor? I don't... But this person, he offered the bet. I didn't. I didn't bring this up. But I took him up on it, and I hope I lose. This guy bet me a case of beer. Beckwith will be full go by the time regular season rolls around.
That's pretty fast recovery, Steve.
I'd be stunned, and that's just pure hope in the world of ACL injuries, and I think that's just pure
hope.
So
if this guy is right, and like I said, he put a case of beer. I didn't say it. He's like, I'll bet you a case of beer.
So is the bet on?
Bet's on.
Bet's on.
And I hope I lose, because this guy's willing to put up, and this guy's a craft beer drinker. So we're not talking, you know, $15 Bud Light, which that's me. But so this guy's going to cough up $30-$40 for a case of beer. So if he's willing to do that, I'll call his bluff, and I'll say Beckwith is the guy that surprises.
We have not heard from Mr. Isbits yet on this matter.
Well, we need Lee's step back player.
Sweezy. Is that work?
Yeah, it's acceptable.
Because he didn't do anything with the Bucs yet. Steve and I have written about this many times, more so Steve. You know, when's the guy had back surgery and played in full 16 games?
So the nature of the injury.
I think that's a safe call.
I think what Lee's saying, the step back, quote unquote, for Sweezy will be that he's just not the player the Bucs hope he will be, which the odds are probably against him, but you know, who knows? It's so such a mystery. So you're looking at me,
Calvin. Waiting for your picks, baby.
You really want me to spit this puppy out, don't you?
First, give me the guy who's going to step up, Steve.
Who's going to step up. You guys were talking. I wasn't thinking too much about this, but step up, I think, is going to be Kevin Pamphile. I think he's going to step up and have another strong season and make the Bucs regret that they didn't extend his contract in his contract year, which is coming up right now. Maybe he gets a deal in August or in July, But I think he is going to step up, and then all of a sudden you've got a young guard on your hands who can play and is big and physical, and those are the guys who make $9 million a year, i.e. Sweezy, on the open market. So the Bucks are going to have a big decision with Pamphile. I think he steps up, and then you've got a big contract decision, because if you pay Pamphile and you expect to pay top dollar for Smith, top dollar for Marpet, very few offensive lines have three full-throttle salary guys. Got a big decision ahead. So he's my guy.
Steve, if there's an injury at the tackle spot, what is your confidence level if Pamphile fills that spot rather than Benenock or whatever? If they try Pamphile, what's your feeling about Pamphile's tackle?
Look, Pamphile's only going to move over to right tackle. They're not going to put him at left tackle. And, he had one okay game there. He's clearly smart enough to handle it. He's, I don't know.
You think they'd be reticent to move him out of the left guard spot?
No. If he gets a contract extension before the season, yeah, then they wouldn't move him and play games with him. But if they're just going to still let him twist in the wind, and yeah, I think they'd move him, sure.
Ira, I can tell you, because I know who you talk to. I've been told the Bucks are scared to death of Pamphile hitting the open market. Scared to death. Because one of two things is going to happen. He's going to gouge the Bucks, or they're going to lose him.
Right now, he's got the look of a very, very savvy draft pick by Jason Light.
He's a smart guy. And frankly, I think he's the perfect ripe guy to take an extension now. That's not crazy money to lock up himself for the future. You put $10 million guaranteed over, as part of a three-year $15 million deal in front of Kevin Pamphile. Does he risk blowing his back out and not take the $10 million? I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays have made genius moves over and over again, throwing lottery tickets in front of guys and ending up underpaying them. I think the Bucks have that shot with Pamphile, but they're not doing it as of yet. The other guy, the 1A I'd give you, and I'll spit it out real quick, is Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans legitimately can challenge to become the first 2,000-yard receiver in the NFL. I think everything's setting up for him. And you know what? All those targets, those 170-something league-leading targets he got last year, I still think they're going to pound that damn ball to him.
That's 11 a game.
I still think they're going to throw to him 10 times a game. It's going to be Jameis's comfort zone. He's going to be open even more with the more weapons, and I think he's got that kind of shot. I'll just say that. So, all right, step back. I'm going to sort of twist on the step back. I'm going to say I'm going to put the step back on the cornerbacks in general. I think Hargraves will get a little better, but I'm not looking for him to make some sort of savage jump. I didn't see enough to think he's going to be incredible this year. Grimes, Father Time, probably catches up to him a little bit. And Ryan Smith, that's the guy I'll be watching in training camp, because he's going to get a lot of reps. They see him as the number three corner, the backup outside corner. Guy didn't have one defensive snap last year. They don't know what position he is. Now they think he's a cornerback.
You got to have three or four good corners.
We know they're not going to push the hell out of Grimes in training camp. Why would you? The guy's 34. He just turned in a great year. He's not going to get a million reps. And this guy, Ryan Smith, now gets to step up in a joint practice in Jacksonville against top. They have a great receiving core there. He's going to be tested. He's going to be tested in preseason games. If he's not that good, that twists the whole Bucs situation. They're probably all of a sudden looking for a cornerback.
Well, they added McClain.
But still, they're counting a lot on Smith, and they need more depth in a hurry if he doesn't show up. So I'm not really – I would say he's probably not going to show up. That's just me. Dirk Cutter's not going to like that, though. He told us that you got to give these guys a shot. But Ira Kaufman forced me to put a name on a paper. So
that's
here
what
I am.
That's what I do.
Cut me
that's
a break, Dirk.
We have not talked about kicking. We have not. So something quickly.
We've talked about kicking for months.
Quickly.
You want to talk kicking? It's your podcast.
Floor is open.
Well, a couple of players, Dotson for one, specifically mentioned the kicking battle and how that it has trickled down to all the other players on the field. Everything stops when they're doing a kicking battle. Now, that's funny in one sense, but it's not in the grand scheme of things, because while I think Isbitz has a problem with this, I don't think you can make the argument proof positive that Aguayo cost the Bucks a game last season. I don't think you can prove that. I don't remember a missed field goal with 4 minutes left when they were down by 2 points. I don't remember that. But who says that's not going to happen again?
Yes.
And most games come down to, less than 7 points. And that's why this kicking battle is so important. Cutter is not going to put up with any nonsense. Cutter wants to win games. He's got to win games. Light's looking for a contract extension. Forget the second round pedigree. Folks there, folks proving it. Aguayo's got a lot to live up to. He's going to have to outkick Folk, and he might have to outkick him significantly.
The game that Bucks fans will point to that they claim Aguayo cost them, and I don't think it's fair because there was plenty of blame to go around, not just Aguayo, was the Rams debacle. You know, Jameis terribly missed Vincent Jackson open. That would have been a touchdown.
Ran out of time.
I always bring up how Keith Tandy got clowned by Tavon Austin at midfield. I mean, Keith Tandy was playing patty cake with him. Tavon Austin scores a touchdown. There was a lot of blame to go around that game. It wasn't just Aguayo.
Nick Folks, it's his job to lose, Ira. Something weird is going to have to happen for Folk to lose that job. And something weird includes Aguayo making a bunch of kicks and impressing because he was awful last year. It'll be interesting to see who gets the shot in preseason games. How are they going to handle that? You don't exactly necessarily have a lot of field goals in preseason games. I'm looking, is Dirk Cutter going, let's say it's third quarter of a preseason game, it's third and six, is he going to run up the middle so he can get a look at one of these kickers?
Who cares about the score, right?
Who cares about the score, exactly. So you got to give these guys a chance, but I think it's Folk's jobs to lose. He's just going to have to look a lot worse than Aguayo.
Is that a natural focal point for Hard Knocks, or do they say, kickers, nobody cares?
Oh, they're going to be all over that.
It's a natural focal point. Keep going back to the Hard Knocks thing. I haven't watched the show a lot. The guys have to be willing to participate. They have to be willing to be talkers and to engage in this. Now, I think if Hard Knocks likes it, I think the story, knowing how Hard Knocks works, will be talking to the other players like Dotson about the kicking battle and the kicking battle, even if Folk doesn't want any part of this stuff or if Aguayo just, you know.
So how everybody else on the team is into this.
Yeah, they can take it from that angle. And, of course, the hidden cameras in the meetings with Jason Light talking about kicker, those could be beautiful. I mean that could be just, you know, must-see television.
I got a question for you, Ira. It deals with kickers and journalism.
This is going to be good, Steve.
Oh, this is early in July. I wrote this. You are a former print journalist, so was I, so was Steve. You know people that still work in the print industry, and I term this as they sleep with one eye open because they're waiting for that email to come. It's like, clean out your desk, you're gone. I think that's starting to show at Sports Illustrated that's had waves of layoffs the last couple of years. They had a panel, all Sports Illustrated staffers, most important players for every NFL team, and it came to the Bucks. Of the top 10 most important players, Brent Grimes was not in there. Not only that, Brent Grimes had as many votes as the guy who's not even yet on the team, Nick Folk, won. Your response?
Well, it depends, Lee, on how the thing is worded. I wrote a column in the Indispensable Bucks, and I certainly had Brent Grimes. What I was judging it by was, what if this guy goes down?
Yes, that's important.
And that's why, you know, Winston's number one. Nobody's going to question that by virtue of the position itself. I mean,
I just thought it was outrageous that a cornerback, like you said, the position, he should have been in the Pro Bowl last year, had a great season.
And there's not great depth at the position.
He's as important, theoretically, as a kicker who's not even on the team? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it shows. Now, maybe that shows why SI is starting to chop people.
They don't know
what they're doing.
Starting to. They've been doing it for
years.
Nobody reads that magazine anymore. You care what's in Sports Illustrated
anymore?
All
we know is training camp's here. That's all we know, Steve.
I'm just trying to get you to throw a couple of pot shots around. Stick, you know?
No, fake news around
here. I thought you were going to say something about Don Banks, who you go back with.
I do.
You got a great – you want to tell that story?
No, we don't have enough time.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
We'll save it
Parcells and Don Banks?
All right, tell it. I believe this was Parcells' first infatuation with the Bucks. That was the one where Culverhouse said he felt like he was jilted at the altar. It was not the one – when he was replacing Dungy. Mm. This is the first time around. And Banks was a staff writer for the Times.
Bucks beat writer.
He's trying like crazy to reach Parcells. And he doesn't have a number for him. So he finally reaches Vinny Detrani from the Bergen Record. I know Vinny Detrani. He's retired.
I love that name.
He and Parcells were airtight. Airtight. Parcells respected the heck out of Vinny Detrani. Trusted him.
Is he still alive,
Vinny Detrani? Still living in Bergen County. Yeah, your old stomping grounds. And a great guy. So Banks reaches Detrani and says,
Vinny.
Yeah, Vinny, I'm desperate. You know, I got to file some kind of Parcells story. I got nothing. How do I reach him? And Detroni, after, you know, reflection of about 30 seconds, says, Don, I don't know you very well. I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you Parcells' cell phone number. But at the same time, I am telling you, and I am demanding of you, if he questions you, you didn't get the number from me. You got it from other people. You don't tell him who you got it from, but I'm going to give you the number. And he does. A 201 phone number. And Banks, you know, is beaming because this is his big break. And immediately starts calling. Can't get him. Calls again about 9 o'clock at night. Can't get him. Finally, you know, one more shot, 11 o'clock at night. I might make late deadline. All of a sudden, somebody picks up the phone. Yeah. You know, Banks is, you know, he's a young reporter. I'm looking for Coach Parcells. I'm looking for Coach Parcells. You got him. What do you want? Who are you? I'm Don Banks from the St. Petersburg Times. I just want to get an update on what's going on with you and the Bucks. Yeah, can you give me a couple of sentences or something? Young man, the first thing I want to know is, how the hell did you get this number? And there was a pause of about 10 seconds. Banks all nervous. Vinny Detroni gave it to me. Well, tell Vinny Detroni to go F himself. Click. And that was the end of that story. So that's a little lesson in journalism right there. You know, I should be making more money off you guys to tell. I got a great story for every podcast over here, Steven.
So, did it,
I want the stick carriers to get behind me and squeeze you boys a little bit.
Did you ever get a follow-up from Detroni? Did he ever complain or come after Banks?
Yeah. Detroni got all over Banks a couple of days later because now Detroni's calling Parcells, and Parcells tells him the story like, I trusted you, Vinny. You're dead to me. And it took about a year or two for Detroni to get back at the Parcells' good graces.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You don't betray your trust, my friend.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. He could have told Parcells any name in the book. He could have said Ira Kaufman.
You know, would DeKemper give anybody Rachel Watson's phone number, Steve, at the threat of, you know, guillotine? No, absolutely not. He's a man of his word.
He would never upset Rachel like that. Are you kidding me? All right, couple of quick things, Ira. First, training camp takeover day, August 5th, Saturday. The stick carriers, the fantastic exploding fan group tied to the Bucks Uncensored podcast. You reference them all the time. Stick carriers, training camp takeover day. Just going to be an incredible day at One Buck on Saturday, August 5th. Definitely check that out. You got to be there. If you're going to camp, that's the day you got to go. Ira's going to be looking for you to squeeze me and Lee to give him a raise. I don't know, what the hell does that mean, Ira? I don't know.
And you've got another announcement pertaining to transportation for that day.
No, you know what? It's probably sold out by now. If not, everybody can go to trainingcampexpress.com and learn about that or see what you missed. But, of course, we've written about that on joebucksfan.com.
Are you sticking with your phrase, a game changer? Stick carrier day, a game changer for this franchise.
A franchise-changing day in the way the franchise is perceived, and there's some other cool stuff coming down the line with that. But it's going to be a great great day.
Any question, Hard Knocks cameras will pick up on this, Stephen?
I have no doubt. But, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hundreds of fans treating training camp like it's a playoff atmosphere. The team's going to respond. It's going to be very, very interesting. Subscribe to Ira's podcast on iTunes or Podbean. All subscribing means is you get it's free. You get a little alert to your phone, and you can get the podcast if you want to, automatically downloaded to your phone. So you don't have to know when it's posting. There it is. But we go Tuesday and Thursday. Thursday's podcast features Dirk Cutter, part 7, some very juicy stuff. I know we teased that a little bit earlier. And you definitely want to catch that podcast on reporting day. The Bucks report in just 2 days. Let's see.
So that'll be the last podcast before the start of training camp competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Next Tuesday's podcast, we'll already have a few practices to look at. We'll be going in all kinds of directions. We'll be flying high. And that's really about it, Mr. Kaufman.
You expect a lot of national media flocking down to One Buck Place over the course of training camp, Steve? Or are we overhyping the sort of the aura around the Bucks going into 2017, Lee? Are we going to get the Bill Polians? Are we going to get Peter King?
Well, Peter King always shows up.
Yeah.
You know, for his, like, his Not hip piece.
And you always corral him too. You always
well, the last couple of years I have, and I'm starting. I corral him elsewhere. I you know, it's a drive-by reporting, and he's only there for a couple hours. So.
Maybe Chuck Todd shows up.
Chuck Todd might show up. here's the thing, Chuck Todd, or his president tweet referred to him as sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd, which I thought was beautiful. There was a lot of national media that showed up when Jameis was a rookie. So I don't know if it's going to match that or not. I think there will be, I don't know if a lot is the correct term, there will be a presence. Whether it's as much as when Jameis was a rookie or not, I don't know. But there will be a national media presence.
You know, one point we should make, there's less national media.
Yeah, I was going to say two things. One, there is less national media, and they're really less prominent than ever. Look, Fox Sports laid off all its writers, NFL Network.
SI.
Is bigger and broader, but NFL.com doesn't travel its writers really a little bit here and there. But look, ESPN is cut. But I don't think the Bucs will have much of a national presence because, frankly, in the NFC South, the Falcons are more interesting than the Bucs.
Defending NFC champs.
On a national interest level, more interesting. More people know about them. Bigger market. You know, defending Super Bowl. Everybody, Cam Newton is a national figure, big name, interesting team, and you know that hurts. That hurts the Bucs on that national recognition.
Real quick about national media and coverage. This isn't so much about the Bucs, but this was when I was at the combine this last winter, and I was invited by a couple of prominent national columnists to have some beers with them. One of which was Alex Marvez, and so we went. Good guy. And so we went to I can't remember the name of the brewery. King something or other, but great. Anyway, great craft beer. And I'm not a craft beer guy, so that says a lot. And we were sitting around talking, and word on the street in Indianapolis is that it's just a matter of time. It may only be a couple of years that the combine moves to Los Angeles. And a combination of media cutbacks, budget cutbacks, and how expensive it is to fly to California, much less to lodge in California, you're going to see a whole lot less coverage of the combine if it moves to Los Angeles for those very reasons. Now, yes, the NFL Network will still be there. As far as local papers or websites or whatnot, you know, they're crunched for budget, unlikely to send that many reporters there because of that reason.
Steve, didn't we see in Phoenix, you and I, a much depleted ESPN crew covering the NFL owners' meetings?
Yeah, it was radically depleted 2 years ago in Phoenix. ESPN had its own outside setup that it had rented, a makeshift studio, the whole shot. This year, not only did they have fewer people there, they were shooting their video in a hallway. In a hallway, Ira. They didn't even pay for a space or have one set up outside. Like a lot of the other networks did, you know, NBC Sports had this giant setup and NFL Network, whatever. ESPN's in a hallway saying, you know, with a guy standing there saying, oh, please walk around Mr. Polian. You know,
with all the money they spend on
all
the
that
NFL.
Money, all the money they spend on the NFL. There they are. Mighty ESPN in a hallway. It was stunning, really, how far they've fallen. But you know what? Sirius XM NFL Radio is doing very well. Sirius is doing extremely well. So media is changing, and that's good. And we're always about that because we are change agents in the media. And Ira,
And you're gonna have a little podcast announcement on Thursday's broadcast, correct?
There's always an announcement. It's JoeBucksFan.com. We don't sleep. All right, Kaufman. You know, take your Ed Morse shirt, your Ed Morse hat, and get the hell out of here.